We've just recently celebrated and honored our military. On Memorial Day and the 75th anniversary of D-Day, our efforts to defeat those who are trying to bring down liberty and freedom are more and more being relegated to history books and videos as those who stood tall in war pass on. We are very fortunate to still have some of our heroes with us, such as my next guest. As a black man in the 1930s and 40s, he knew what bigotry was firsthand, but he also knew what love of country and personal passion and goals were. As part of the 332nd Fighter Group, also known as the Tuskegee Airmen, he flew 43 missions during World War II, downing numerous Nazi planes and earning the Distinguished Flying Cross. Sad element of those times, however, meant that a black man who displayed heroics in wartime would not always be seen as a hero by everyone when he came home. Nevertheless, my next guest continued to stand strong as change eventually brought fairness. He tells his amazing story in his book, Soaring to Glory, a Tuskegee Airmen's firsthand account of World War II, Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart, Jr. Thank you so much for being here today, sir.
Thank you.
It's an amazing story. That's, if you're a history fanatic, if you're a military war fanatic, if you're just a social science fanatic, it's got so many elements that Lieutenant Colonel Stewart brings to light. But I think the first, and I even mentioned this in the introduction, sir, you always had a, without a passion for life, you really don't have a life. And your passion by, without any doubt, was aviation. Why was that?
Well, absolutely. As a babe in Newport News, Virginia, I was near Langley Field. And as a babe, I saw those planes taking off and flying. And my parents felt as though I sort of had a yen to enjoy those planes flying. And we moved to New York, still a young kid. And we were only maybe a mile or two from LaGuardia Airport. And I used to do the same in New York there. And I eventually said to myself, gee whiz, I want to be a pilot when I grow up. And, of course, World War II entered the scene. And I was able to take the examination as an aviation cadet, passed the exam, and was called into the service to take the aviation training, except it had to be done on a segregated basis.
I want to step aside for a second, too, because voices are deceiving without knowing the math of the matter. How old are you, sir?
I'll be 95 in about 3 weeks, July 4th. I'll be 95.
Born on the 4th of July, and it's one thing I've, there's a common thread through Soaring to Glory, too, your book. There are so many points that one little turn could have denied you everything, even before you got into the military. The, what was being called the experiment almost came to an end. And there's so many other personal points, too. As I remember one of the stories, you're going in for the exam, and because you had a were afflicted with polio as a youth, and you overcame it, but still your right leg wasn't 100%. You were watching the doctor, saw what he was doing, knew that he was going to tap your right leg, which naturally would not do anything. You'd flunk out just because of that. So you knew how to, well, fake a reflex just to keep the thing moving forward.
Well, it was, I guess, the luck of the draw there. I guess we all have these little impediments going through life there, and we learn how to sidestep them and that type of thing. But I was very lucky. Everything seemed to fall right in place for me, and I had no real difficulty in not only getting into the cadet corps, but getting my wings, and even went overseas and came back without having any harm done to my myself mentally or physically. So I consider myself very fortunate.
And you call it luck. I think other people would call it destiny. Would you disagree with that?
I don't disagree with it. I don't disagree with it at all.
Talk about the training, because we know what civilian society was like with black people in those days. Did you face that same degree of negativity, even hostility within the military body as well?
Yes, I did. The field that I was stationed at itself was 95% black, and that was about 10 miles from a university that was the Tuskegee University down in Alabama. So I had a good outlet as far as the social welfare was concerned, but in other venues there where I might go to other airfields, or especially in some of the townships that were below the Mason-Dixon line there, I could expect humiliation and indifference as far as the attitude was concerned to me.
What was the training like as far as what were you given equipment and planes that were equal level with the rest of the military? Were you given, you know, were you given cast-offs? Because again, you were labeled the experiment. So did you get the tools you needed to have the training that you needed?
We trained from the very, very same playbook that the Air Corps had at the time. And I would not say that we were given cast-offs and that type of thing. I feel as though that as far as the equipment was concerned and as far as the training, the quality of training is concerned, I think I had was on par with any other fighter group, regardless of their color.
Talking with Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart, Jr., his book Soaring to Glory, a Tuskegee Airman's firsthand account of World War II. And you were listening to Issues and Ideas. When it came time for that first mission, what goes through your head and your heart at that time? Because I mean, you obviously had the passion of flying, albeit your initial passion was for commercial flight, but here you were going into an unknown degree of battle, I would assume. I mean, you knew where you were going, what you had to do, but you don't always know what you're going to do, what the response from the other side is going to be.
Well, this was going to be a trial, of course, and I was wondering if I was going to perform. I was determined that I would do my best to perform, but there's always that chance that for some reason you might err or slip up or something like that. So I was very, very conscious of myself as performing was concerned, but the first mission went off without a hitch. I actually stood back in awe as I was flying on that first mission there because it was something that I had never witnessed before, you know, like 600 bombers up there, and you're circling over these bombers, maybe 300 fighter planes circling over these bombers. It was just a new vista that I had just never seen before.
During wartime such as World War II, I mean, we have history now to look back and see the various points that were going on. Were you tuned into the various elements of what was happening throughout Europe, or did you just have to be concerned with what was expected of you and what you had to do? What was your list of things to do that day was?
No, we were pretty well tuned in. We had the intelligence briefings, and we would be tuned in. And, of course, we had radio contact with all points in Europe, and we were pretty well advised there. So we knew pretty well what was going on.
I was always of the understanding that when it came to, especially with air battles, it was almost like a chess game. You had various moves, and there were certain things you could do, other things you would never do. Did you have flexibility in the air in spite of a plane that was going in? Because, again, you never know. For example, you might be expecting two dozen planes from the other side coming at you. All of a sudden, you're staring at four dozen.
That's right. There was always the surprise element. And as far as the aerial combat was concerned, is that there were strategies that were used, and you tried to go contrary to those strategies or match the strategy that the enemy would put up. But I found that one word that I can use to describe the air battles that we were in at the time there was surprise. So that would be the word, is that it was the most of the guys that got shot down never saw the plane that shot them down, and it was just a surprise event.
That's something else, too, you learn through Lieutenant Colonel Stewart's book, how you would think that we've heard about, you may be the most famous was Gary Powers when he was shot down, and various white pilots can be shot down. You could blend in to your surroundings and buy yourself some time. That was not certainly a possibility for Lieutenant Colonel Stewart or any other members of his squad. We're wrapping up our time with Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart, his book Soaring to Glory here on Issues and Ideas. You were in the service still when change in race relations started to begin. When you can, did that give you hope for more, you know, meaningful change in society? And did you see that when you came home?
Well, I didn't see it immediately. I got out in the service of January of 1950. Just prior to that, in June or May of 1949, the 332nd Fighter Group, or Tuskegee Airmen, had the honor of winning the Air Force's first, and I'm going to use a generic term, Top Gun tournament. It was a tournament that matched all of the fighter groups in the United States at the time against one another. They sent their three best pilots out to Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. And there was 10 days of competition, aerial gunnery at 20,000 feet, aerial gunnery at 10,000 feet, rocketry, strafing, dive bombing, skip bombing. And when it was all over, the event was won by the Tuskegee Airmen. Not that this said that they were superior to everybody else, but it was their day as far as the honors were concerned there. And on another day, some other group may have won the contest. But the Air Force learned at that time that certainly the Tuskegee Airmen were on par with any of the other fighter groups in the country. And 1 month later, the base that the Tuskegee Airmen were on was disbanded, and all of the personnel were distributed throughout the world to different bases for complete integration into the Air Force.
It is indeed an amazing story, firsthand of history, of one man's adventures in, well, not just the military life, but in his life overall. It's a very variety of lessons for you as a reader that you'll gain. I think, as we said earlier on, just first and foremost, if you don't have a direction and a goal in your life, then you're really not having a life. That's certainly an idea that Lieutenant Colonel Stewart embraced fully. You learned about how things were in the process of changing. Harry Truman plays a role. Many names of military fame play a role in the story as well. It's Soaring to Glory, a Tuskegee Airman's firsthand account of World War II. Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart, Jr., we thank you for your service. We honor you for all that you continue to give and the lessons you provide with your story today. Thanks so much for being here today, sir.
Well, thank you so much. Bye-bye now.